This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is a segment wherein we answer your questions. It's a way to get us questions related to medicine, overall health, and in specific, nutrition. And the way you get questions to us is via radio program at AOL.com, and it's a wonderful opportunity to hear, you know, a diverse set of issues, because you never know what kind of issues are going to pop up on Q&A with Layla, and they may be directly pertinent to you or to your loved ones. Today, we're with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. She's a registered dietitian. She also has earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing today, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So, it's spring. We're enjoying balmy weather here in the Northeast. It's great, very exhilarating time of the year. And we're getting a lot of questions from listeners. And in the news this week, I found this story particularly exciting. The headline is, Eating Dark Chocolate as a Daily Snack Could Help Boost Athletic Performance. Yay!
Oh, my.
So what was once thought to be a vice has now turned into a virtue. And, of course, I always love these stories about the health benefits of dark chocolate because I'm a fan of dark chocolate. So the story is from Science News.
Okay, you just completely dropped out.
It doesn't matter, actually, from the standpoint of, from the standpoint of your hearing me. It's a problem.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter because
it's
recorded into the thing.
But it's still recording?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, that I didn't know.
Yeah, it records on my side.
I apologize.
So let's, but if you can't hear the question, that's a problem. All right, so.
Yeah, but you were just talking. It wasn't a question.
I understand.
So, yeah.
So okay. I was just talking. So so that dropped out at about 2, around 2. And so what we're going to do, Alan, is I'm going to take it from reading the article.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Okay, the article is from Science Daily. The research performed at Kingston University in London. And the illustration is of a happy scientist holding a big bar of dark chocolate. It says here, yeah, dark chocolate has already been hailed for its positive effects on cardiovascular health, and now a new study has found that tasty treat could help give sports enthusiasts an extra edge in their fitness training. So this is something which I have certainly exploited in my training.
Uh-huh.
And the team led by postgraduate research student Rishikesh Kankesh Patel, there's a picture of him eating a bar of dark chocolate, discovered that dark chocolate provides similar benefits to beetroot juice. We've talked about that here frequently on Intelligent Medicine. And it turns out that dark chocolate provides a similar boost, not via the nitrates, which are in beetroot juice, which dilates blood vessels and reduces oxygen consumption, allowing athletes to go further for longer. Dark chocolate provides a similar boost via a substance called epicatechin that actually, which also has an impact. Yeah, the catechins. It similar to those that you find in coffee and green tea. That also increases nitric oxide production in the body. So how do they prove that? They looked at a group of 9 amateur cyclists. The Brits really love cycling. They are field champions in the Olympics now. And what they found was that they broke them into 2 groups. The first group was asked to replace one of its normal daily snacks with 40 grams of a dark chocolate, which is standardized for flavanols. I can tell this is from Britain because they took it for a fortnight. You know what a fortnight is?
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 weeks.
40 days?
No, fortnight is it two weeks. 2 weeks. It's actually 14 days. That's a Brit word for 14 days. The other participants substituted 40 grams of white chocolate, and the white chocolate didn't cut it. It turns out that the dark chocolate was required in terms of...
it's the color. Yeah.
Well, it's the flavanols that provide that color. You can get the kind of chocolatey taste from white chocolate, but it's worthless. It just tastes good. Comment. On the one hand, you know, I think a lot of people may have been led down the primrose path a little bit by my many features on the benefits of chocolate. So they've said that, well, great, you know, Dr. Hoffman eats chocolate. He says considers a health food, so I'm going to eat a lot of chocolate. A problem with chocolate is that it is highly caloric, almost any way you slice it. So you eat a lot of chocolate, and you know, there are some health benefits, but ultimately the downside is you're going to hold on to weight. You may worsen your insulin resistance. And so you got to get way up there in terms of high-test chocolate. Now, on the paleo diet, it turns out that you can't have any sugar. So what do? I still have this real affinity for chocolate. I'm not supposed to have any sugar. So I've ordered these either 99% or 100% cocoa bars. Which are, in a recent article, I actually gave a link to these bars, which I order online. Or you can actually get 99% chocolate at some of these, you know, chocolate bars in some of the fancier gourmet supermarkets. And so what I'm getting is, now this is an acquired taste because it's really kind of bitter, but... I find
it is bitter. There's no sweetness at all.
No sweetness, but a very rich taste, and it's an acquired taste. You know, and at first, to real chocolate lovers who like Snickers bars, it's not going to taste good. But you will through those, you get the benefits of the chocolate without a lot of extra calories. And a lot less goes a lot farther because you can just break up a few squares of that, and it's very rich tasting, and you will get the circulatory benefits and maybe the athletic benefits of dark chocolate that way. Or you can use dark cocoa. And one of the recipes I use is I take raw macadamia butter, and mix it with dark cocoa powder, and then I use it as a dip for those wonderful strawberries that are now available. Fresh strawberries are available in the springtime. And and we make sort of strawberry, you know, chocolate dip for the strawberries with that mixture. Again,
lovely.
it's not sweet, it's paleo, but it's a good combo. It tastes really good.
The bitterness and the sweetness with the strawberries,
Right. So
that's great.
So there you have it. I mean, if you want the athletic benefits of chocolate, but too much of this, you know, the experiments are done usually with pretty high-test dark chocolate, so I think there's skin in the game for the chocolate manufacturers of the world. Chocolate consumption as a luxury food is just soaring worldwide. The price of cocoa is going way, way up. You know, if you want to make money, invest in cocoa futures, not forget gold and silver, because it's now a health food.
Right. There we go. Great.
Okay.
Enjoy your chocolate, everybody.
And it also, based on that same principle, it could make you sexier, right? Nitric oxide, right? That's the Viagra principle.
Oh.
There we go. So maybe there's something to it.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's say Valentine's Day already passed, but, you know, there's certainly something to it.
Okay. Yeah, I hear from a lot of clients that say, oh, well, my dark chocolate is 70%. And I say, well, guess what? That's not high enough. You need to go over 85.
Yeah. And so, that's tough for some. That's a tough barrier for some people to surmount, unfortunately.
It's, right.
Doesn't taste right. Well, like what they got used to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there you have it.
Okay.
Let's get to questions.
So we've got an email. We've got an email from Angelique. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I understand there are many factors that affect the nutritional quality of food, you know, how it's handled. How is one to know which vegetables ought to be cooked versus eaten raw? And what are your thoughts on slow cooking of vegetables and animal protein in comparison to other methods? And then finally, what about the raw food proponents who say that cooking increases inflammation in the body? This could be a whole podcast.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot
this
of information.
This could be a whole
there.
Podcast.
Well, okay, so you know what I will mention, and then I'll let you take over because this is really your forte, is that EWG, it was Environmental Working Group, has recently come up with its list, .org, has recently come up with their list of the Dirty Dozen of the worst produce to buy conventionally in terms of the antibiotics that they're doused with. And that pertains to the situation, you know, do you want to eat a lot of stuff raw right out of the package? Because you may actually get a lot of antibiotic residues. So look that up. What I notice is that strawberries have replaced apples as the most... did I say antibiotics? Or I meant pesticides.
Antibiotics is what you said. So
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, but that's not what, because antibiotics is
pesticides.
I misspoke because not antibiotics, obviously, with produce. Antibiotics, yes, with animal products, of course, but not with produce.
Yeah.
So here we're talking about pesticides. We're talking about glyphosate. We're talking about all the different things that they saturate fruits and vegetables with. So it turns out strawberries have supplanted apples. The worst culprits. So those are the ones that it makes sense to buy organic because at least you're going to get less. Maybe you won't get zero because there's sometimes some crossover of pesticide exposure even with what's so-called organic. But then there's some that are they made a list of the safe ones, which are less likely to be contaminated. I noticed that topping the list of the safe ones, you know, I go to the store sometimes and it says organic avocados. So I go, well, yeah, organic, that's better than... But it doesn't matter really so much with avocados because avocados...
That's right.
..are, first of all, you take off the outside usually. And also they may not be as heavily sprayed as some of the others. So they're, you know...
Exactly.
...economize on the avocados, splurge on the organic strawberries, and make sure that you really wash them off. Berries are especially prone to lots of spraying with fungicides and pesticides. So I really, even though they're pre-washed, I wash them anyway. I just clean them off.
That's always a good idea. Well, Angelique wants to know which vegetables ought to be cooked versus eaten raw. And, you know, besides stating the obvious, like you don't want to eat raw eggplant certain vegetables you need to cook anyway because they're not amenable to being eaten raw. But there are other vegetables, or actually I'm speaking of tomato, which is a fruit, that when cooked or processed, it can help to release the lycopene.
Right. So
Our use of the lycopene.
So to clarify, fruits and vegetables contain both what are called water-soluble and fat-soluble nutrients, vitamins, minerals, and other plant constituents, like lycopene, which is not formally a vitamin, but it's a substance it's a carotenoid. It belongs in the carotene family. And carotenoids are fat-soluble, whereas B vitamins, vitamin C, and others and minerals are water soluble. So the notion is that if you want to better absorb a fat soluble thing, you cook it in a little fat. So that making tomato sauce, which is made in olive oil, is an ideal way to get your absorption of those carotenoids. Another example is I made collard greens the other night. Now collard greens are tough to tackle raw. You know, they're very, very
Yes.
You know, so what I do is I steam them a little bit. I steam them, and then I sauteed these in Southern style in some bacon grease. I mean, that may sound abhorrent to some people. But we now know that that's actually healthy, and that's what
The ham hock. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. People, and then I actually put some bacon chunks into it, and it was delicious. Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the vegetable equivalent of mac and cheese. I mean, it was scrumptious. So that's a way to release all those nutrients that are locked in that kind of tough, very chewy green vegetable, and liberate some of that. Now, yeah, you may be leaching out some of the water solubles, but you're liberating a lot of the fat solubles. So there's a bit of a trade-off there.
That's true. Well, pork is also high in thiamine, so if you've got some bacon in there, you know, it's still helpful.
Good.
Yeah. Well, thiamine is vitamin B1.
So,
now,
so do you have a take on
cooking as opposed to, what's that?
Do you have a take on the raw versus the cooked ratios, or
No. I think both. I think both are good.
I think you need,
some need to be.
You need to diversify your portfolio.
Some need to be cooked.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we can't eat everything raw. You know, there's also that. You know, if you're going to eat raw broccoli every day in your salad, that could also wind up being a little more goitrogen than you need, especially if you have hypothyroidism, for instance. But cooking those particular vegetables can help to deactivate much of that.
Let's
so
speak. Let's
it's
speak
a good
to
idea.
This. Let's speak to the. You know, this is a very detailed question, but they said, you know, the raw foods advocates say that when you cook food, it creates inflammation. That is hogwash.
Yep.
That's just absolutely hogwash.
It is.
And
except.
Yeah.
There is an exception.
Yeah.
If you're going to grill and char your meat,
that okay.
And cause heterocyclic amines and, you know, PAHs and all the other things, that will create inflammation in the body. But the way to counteract that is to use a nice marinade.
With spices,
you know,
yes.
A vinegar-based marinade, a citrus-based marinade, something like that.
By the way, I grill.
It's a matter of cook how.
By the way, I grill vegetables. I think a wonderful way to consume vegetables is, you know, when you have, you know, you can make a couple of hamburgers, you got room on the grill, you know, you can take some peppers, you can take some endives, you can take, you know, virtually anything, even broccoli.
Asparagus.
And you can, and asparagus is particularly good. And you will put a little char on that, and maybe there is, you know, some risk associated with that. But I think that that's minimal compared to the benefits. And then you can offset the downsides by having adequate spice. You know, spices like turmeric and so on, rosemary, oregano. These have really anti-inflammatory properties. So, you know, I got to say, there's a lot of these theories out there that are wrong-headed theories that are being promulgated. I mean, that's what we're trying
to
apply a corrective to here on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah.
So,
but another thing about what Angelique asks about slow cooking as opposed to other methods of cooking, slow and low is always best.
Yeah.
Overall. Mm-hmm. So cooking slow on a lower flame, you know, if you're ever making, say, a burger or a steak in a pan, you don't necessarily want it to be screaming hot. Yeah, a lot of people like a sear. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're going to sear it a little bit for a minute or so, but slow and low is really the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lower the heat, and the longer the cooking time.
And I will observe, too, that it's better to steam than to, you know, boil something. So you want to, like, your broccoli.
Yes.
You're not going to throw your broccoli and submerge it in a bunch of water and then cook the heck out of it, because you might as well drink the water. Unless you're making a soup, which is a great way to capture the nutrients that leach out when you cook. You know, so you just put a lot of vegetables in a pot, and then, you know, you're drinking the vegetable water and the broth, which actually still captures some of the nutrients. There is some neutralization of some of the raw enzymes. It's true. When you cook them, you degrade them, you break them down, and that's why it's a good idea to have you know, at least one generous salad every day with lots of raw vegetables in it, because
that's
that way you'll capture some of those benefits. So I am for raw. I'm just not saying exclusively raw. And you know, the other thing is you know, buy a steamer platform or get some of those pots that have internal steamers, so that the you know, so the stuff is not literally submerged in the boiling water.
That's true. That's true. We also have to keep in mind, and many people don't realize this, our digestive juices, our stomach acid, is also cooking, if I may use that word, in order to break down everything that we're eating.
Right.
So the method is already kind of happening within our bodies.
Right.
In order to digest and absorb properly.
Exactly. You know, so to say that, you know, it's all directly going into your bloodstream, it isn't really. It is being somewhat processed. And also the bacteria in our intestinal tract process the food into usable substances. There are partners in the process of digestion. And I learned something recently, quite interesting, that coffee is actually a source of, to some extent, fiber. Coffee feeds the microbiome in our gastrointestinal tract. I learned that after a conversation with Dr. Tim Spector. We did a podcast with him about his book, The Diet Myth. And it's really quite fascinating is that some of the ways that food is beneficial is not because of the nutrients it provides to us, but because of the nutrients that the foods provide to the microbiome, which then either flourish or are inhibited based on our food intake. So we're feeding a population 4 pounds of bacteria in our gastrointestinal tract, which have a real strong relationship to our health. They make vitamins, they make essential compounds, but they also regulate our immune system, our metabolism, our moods, and just are part of really an integral part of our overall well-being. So feed your microbiome with healthy
Microbiome. It's freaky. It's freaky to almost think that we're like the host superorganism,
right,
to so many billions, trillions of bacteria.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is all critical to our health. Angelique, thank you for these very, very thoughtful, thought-provoking questions.
Indeed.
Let's see here.
So actually, we divide these podcasts into two parts. So believe it or not, we have run out of time for part one, but give us a because I mean that was a long question and we did a little bit of a prelude on the subject of chocolate, so let's do kind of a lightning round in part two, squeeze in as many questions as we can. And what do we have coming up in part two?
Should I be taking iodine for Hashimoto's?
Okay, we'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.